Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, episode 12 for August 11th, 2006. Rasmus Lerdorf. It's time for Floss Weekly. Once again, our semi... You know, we're going to have to change the name, Chris, because I keep missing release dates. Semi-weekly. Floss semi-weekly. Floss...
Floss kind of weekly.
Floss whenever we get around to it. Weekly.
Floss, it's on Leo's hard drive.
It's or not. Weekly. Chris DeBona is here, our favorite open source advocate, who's been doing this stuff for a long, long time. How was OSCON?
OSCON was actually a pretty good time. It was exhausting.
You gave a speech that got a lot of coverage.
Well, actually, that was mostly Greg's speech. Mine was just more of a sort of a status update kind of thing.
But Google announced a kind of a SourceForge implementation, which I thought was interesting coming from Chris DeBona, one of the guys behind SourceForge.
Well, so I helped name it. I didn't actually work on the original SourceForge. I worked more on GForge after some time. But that irony wasn't lost on the SourceForge guys either.
It was
really successful.
They weren't angry about what you're doing.
Oh, gosh, no. No, we share a namespace. So if you create a project on SourceForge and then you try to create a project on ours, it'll say, that's cool, but you have to approve it from this other guy, you know?
That's great. So there'll be no conflict in naming. That's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's really useful.
What is the name of this new Google?
It's just a hosting component on Google's code website.
Okay. So.
We're playing this like really mellow. You have no idea. It's we've just gotten started. We have bug tracking and subversion version control, and that's about it. You know, we're keeping it super simple.
But it's a way to host your open source project and have some of the tools.
Exactly what it's for.
Yeah,
that's right. But yeah, no, the show itself was just like jam packed. They have like I think they have like 10 tracks with 45-minute segments. So there's like.
That's a lot.
It's kind of appallingly a lot.
That's a lot. What did you attend and what did you enjoy and what did you learn?
I went to a lot of things. I learned a lot of things. I'm still pretty exhausted from it because we were doing so much press, so many press calls while we were there that, you know, I kind of cut into the actual fun part of it. So the O'Reilly party was a lot of fun. I didn't go to the Stonehenge party this year, unfortunately.
After all we talked about?
I know. I'm such a dog.
This is Randall Schwartz's party, the one that he gave us the secrets to a couple of flosses ago. And you didn't go. You didn't go.
I didn't go. I'm a bad person.
Oh, well. There are people who went who don't remember a thing. So, you know, you might have gone and just forgot.
Or we could say I went and they wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know, that's for sure.
It was a great party. Yes.
Well, but I hope we'll hear more about OSCON.
Not Rasmus.
Yeah. We have a great guest today. I'm actually thrilled to get this guy on because I probably use more of his code than anybody else.
That's true.
Rasmus Lerdorf is the author of PHP.
The creator and author and co-developer now because there's so many people who work on it, of PHP. So.
It's a programming language, but also really powers the internet in many ways. So without further ado, Rasmus Lerdorf.
And so let's get started. So you're from Greenland. You're 33. You're vegetarian.
This is a running joke, Rasmus. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
And Miguel Diaz-Caza started it. He's like, I'm 33. I'm vegetarian. And it's like, no, I'm not. I just say that.
None of which is true.
Well, I'm also not.
The genesis of PHP is kind of unusual for a programming language. It was originally, am I correct in thinking, named Personal Homepage?
Yeah, it started it 11, 12 years ago now, and it was a set of tools to help people, because everyone back then, it was really cool to put up their own personal homepage, and this was a set of tools to help them manage things on there to get a better idea of who was visiting their homepage. So there was some logging components to it. There was a little tag that you could enable at the bottom of your pages that would say, how many times your page had been visited, who the last visitor was, where they were from, the IP address and domain name, stuff like that.
So it wasn't a language, really. It wasn't really a language.
No, it was a set of tools. And underneath it was sort of the framework that I used to build that thing. But my initial thought was, well, the tools are kind of interesting. And they were released as a set of tools. And then as people started using these tools, they started asking me, well, I want some other tools. Geez, Rasmus. Yeah, I mean, so I only had five or six different tools, and they wanted more stuff. And I wrote some, and then I started telling them exactly, well, it's not that hard to write a new tool. There's this thing underneath it that enables you to write these tools. And a few people picked up on it, but most people just asked me to write it for them. But still, that's when I started to realize that it's more interesting, the underlying component to this, and allowing people to write their own little widgets to put on their websites was actually a more interesting effort than writing widgets for people. So that trickled to the surface, and I had another tool called Form Interpreter, or FI, that I then brought in, and the whole thing became sort of a joke name on TCP/IP. It became PHPFI with a slash in it. That was sort of the second version, where I moved away from the tools component more towards the enabling technology behind the tools. The tools were still sort of there, but they faded to the background as just minor examples of how to use the system to build your own stuff.
And where were you when you created this?
I was consulting in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
I started it a little bit. I was actually down in Silicon Valley working for a Brazilian company called Nutec.
Nutec.
Yeah, N-U-T-E-C. Not the guys that did...
I was going to say the toaster, but not the toaster.
Yeah, not the video toaster guys. No, it wasn't the toaster guys. This was a company out of Brazil. I used to live in southern Brazil, and I worked for them down there doing lots of Unix development. And they needed somebody who spoke English and knew a little bit about the North American market. So they sent me to Mountain View to help them with their U.S. office. And I ended up being product manager, sales guy, anything basically, except dealing with the technology, which is what I tended to do. And I got tired of that. And the whole web thing was catching on. And so this was 93, 94. And it was obvious that the web was going to be big. And they were a little slow catching on. And
just to put this in perspective, 93, 94, we were still using Mosaic. Netscape had just come out. It was very early on in the World Wide Web.
Yeah, it was pretty early. But still,
we hadn't even really gotten to the cat pictures phase.
Oh, gosh, no. But we did have the Trojan room coffee pot in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. Remember that? So
sure.
You wrote an interpreter really just to write these widgets.
Yeah, initially, yes, these tools. I called them tools back then, but they were just little tiny widget things that you could put up on your website. And there was some early... People keep saying, well, the first version of PHP was in Perl. Not quite true. I explored doing some of this stuff in Perl, but the problem was that the way you do that back then was with a CGI program. And a CGI basically works by doing a fork and exec of the web server process.
Very inefficient.
Extremely slow.
Yeah.
And computers we had back then in 93, 94, Perl was smaller, sure, but it still completely killed a server if you had any sort of traffic and you had to fork and exec on every single request. And the ISP I was hosting some of my stuff on just really didn't like the fact that I was eating his entire server just from my stuff. So I had to find a lighter way of executing my tool. So the Perl bit really disappeared very quickly. I didn't even have a single release that was Perl-based. Before I released anything, I had written my own little thing. It wasn't really a language. It was just a way of taking tags in HTML and associating it with some C code that I had embedded into the web server itself.
Was it written for Apache originally as a mod?
No, this was before Apache. So this was originally written as a patch against the NCSA web server.
Of course, that was the big server, the only
server. Which is also where Apache came from. So it's sort of... And
like brother and sister.
Yeah.
So you patched the NCSA server to when it saw... And this is, by the way, I'm sure one of the real secrets to the success of PHP is it's inline in the HTML. So it's reading the HTML file. It says, oh, there's some PHP. Let me execute this stuff in C.
Yes. Yes. And so, that was the whole point back then, was a set of hooks. There was no if conditions. It was not a language. It was just a tag interpreter that would see these tags and then hand off control to the C code very quickly.
That's and this is, cool. I think, I can't stress enough how important this was back then, because the Perl costs were significant. You know, you basically had to implement the whole web server yourself in Perl if you wanted it to be even slightly efficient. Yeah.
I mean, that's why Mod Perl came a couple of years later, because it just wasn't feasible.
Right. And then it became a question of memory, but by then the memory was getting big enough, it wasn't as big of a deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, PHP's ease of use was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and still is, frankly. When you see things like, of course, twit.tv, which is running on Drupal, written in PHP, and the templating for it is, in fact, in PHP. And you couldn't do, you know, you wouldn't do, well, I guess you could, but you wouldn't want to do, say, Perl templating. But with PHP, it makes perfect sense.
Well, people do it all the time.
Yeah, there are some good ones. There's this thing called Mason. There are some pretty decent versions in Perl as well. A lot of the stuff today, you can do in almost
anything. You can do in anything. Okay, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that unique anymore.
But at the time...
But there's an accessibility factor here. At the time, it was somewhat unique, but you still have things like when Apache came out, there was something called Mod Include that did some of the same things.
Oh, server-side includes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the idea of server-side include does date all the way back to NCSA, and they did have that concept. So it wasn't the first time this had been done. There were other things back then, but this just seemed to catch on. And ISPs, I mean, while it was still attached to NCSA, the take-up was minimal. People didn't want to run my hacked NCSA version.
No.
But as soon as Apache came out and they had an API so that they could install standard Apache from the Apache guys, and via the API they could extend it with a little piece called Mod PHP, then it started to really take off, because then they didn't feel like there was some kid who had just hacked up their web server and they were installing this hacked version. They got sort of an official version of Apache, an official version of PHP, and they hooked it together themselves, and off they went.
How does it work now? What's the mechanism?
Same way.
Same way.
It hasn't changed, which is interesting. There are different ways of running it now. You can run it as a standalone fast CGI server. You can run it as a CGI, you can run it as a TUX module, even you can run it as a THTTP module.
You can run it as a script. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, it's a standalone command line script, sure.
.php,
you can run. Yeah,
but
you can run it.
Is it? It's its own interpreter now, though. You're not. It's not really C. It's very C-like, and it's identical to C.
Well, not quite identical. I mean,
okay.
All the signs.
I'm sorry. Identical.
There are quite a few differences between PHP and C.
So where do the dollar signs come from?
Dollar signs. Well, yeah, dollar signs, basically because it made the implementation easier, state machine implementation much easier, and variable separation from function naming was trivial. And it seemed to be that people were used to that. I mean, Perl was big. Everyone used Perl 93, 94, and 95, right? They still do, obviously. So it didn't seem like much of a stretch. And I wasn't trying to build something that was new and strange and, mm-hmm. and sort of revolutionized programming in any way. It was just building on what people already know. And
it was pragmatic from your point of view.
Sure, completely pragmatic. And trying to figure out what do people expect? What do people like myself with some C background, some Perl background, some awk and sed scripting, perhaps some shell scripting, what would they expect things to be called? And how would they expect a language to look? And that's what PHP became.
I think you could make the case that right now it's probably, well, I hate to say it, but it seems to me that the most popular language for web application programming. I mean, there's some strong contenders, but PHP is very strong.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I haven't counted, so I don't know.
Right. And with popularity, there's also lots of criticism along the way, right? So, which is always fun. But yeah, it is strong, and it even with all the criticism lately, it doesn't seem to be dying off. Lots of people will criticize PHP on their blogs, and the blog software is written in PHP. Right?
So, WordPress is PHP. Of course, Drupal is PHP. I mean, a lot of stuff is PHP now.
Yeah, and all the little Web 2.0 startups, most of them anyway, are PHP-based.
Those that aren't Rails.
Except for Meebo. Did you know that Meebo is C++?
Meebo is all C++.
That's
all
crazy.
That's what I heard.
That's just crazy.
That's what Nat Torkington told me. I couldn't believe
that's
it.
Impressive. If that's true.
No, that's not impressive. That's just that's
crazy.
Showing off.
It's showing off. That's it.
Yeah.
So PHP now stands for?
Well, it's the PHP Hypertext Preprocessor. It's a stupid name. I hesitate a little bit to say it. It's just PHP.
It doesn't stand for anything.
And there's no more phi at the end.
No.
I like the phi. I don't remember the phi era, but I think that's funny.
Well, it came right after foe.
And then just before FUM. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Yeah. So Zend, of course, made a big difference in terms of
PHP. Well, did it?
Did it? It seems like it made a big difference in speed.
It's my memory. And I'm not going to just stir up old coals here. But it seems that, you know, Zend came around well after PHP was firmly solidified.
Sure. But, I mean, Zev and Andy, who, like, Zev, the Z from Zev, and the ND from Andy, that's Zend, right? Zev and Andy came around in mid-97 or so, when they were using PHP FI at the university they're at in Tel Aviv. And they basically, they were using it for stuff, but they had some problems. I think they had some deeply nested things that were doing strange things. And they were both CS guys and actually knew how to write a parser, unlike my hacked up state machine. And they basically had looked at my stuff and they were very impressed that it worked, I think.
That's a nice way to put it. We're impressed that this works.
Actually, it came out, it works.
That's a very positive spin on it.
Something along those lines, yes. And they basically volunteered. And at the time, I was getting a little bit tired because I felt like I was writing the web applications for half the web out there, because people, they wouldn't submit bug reports or patches. They would mostly just send me, hey,
here's my code, fix it.
Yeah, fix it, or write me something that does this. And I say, well, it's really easy, just do this, this, and this. And they say, okay, that's great, that's half of it, how about the rest of it?
Yeah, Greenlander, get off your butt.
And, that's, and nice.
I was getting a little bit depressed that they were just sort of pulling stuff out of me. And at the time, it was either, okay, this was either going to die, or I'm going to have to somehow delegate out and get a bigger team behind it.
Does it, let me, just before we go on, because I think that that's an interesting feeling, and I don't think it's uncommon in the open source community. In fact, you frequently see flameouts where people say, I just can't handle the community. I'm done. You guys are just driving me nuts.
You guys, I'm going home.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit. I mean, Chris, you have probably a lot of experience with this. Is that an issue in open source?
You know, it's funny. I was actually talking to Rasmus about this before. It seems about every 5 months, somebody will try to flame out publicly. And that's when everyone hears about it. They're like, oh, it's somebody leaving open source. It's the end of open source, you know? And it's actually quite regular for people to fade in and fade out.
It's a lot of work. You burn out.
Well, yeah. Also, there's other things to do, you know? Yeah. Maybe they have jobs that are separate from their open source life, you know?
It happened. It did happen recently.
Having a kid.
With one of the Zend frameworks, I think, one of the developers.
Yeah, what's the story about that, Raz?
It's Zend framework is a completely separate project, and I honestly don't know. I don't know. You'll have to ask him. I think you mean the solar guy, and I don't know what his reasoning was.
And the thing is, in a way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it. It's like for most of these communities, if they get important enough that people will notice when somebody snippy leaves.
Well, but here's where it may matter a little bit. I mean, we almost lost Rasmus if Zend hadn't come along. Is that I do think I think we as users sometimes are really demanding and don't really appreciate what we're getting.
Yeah, well, part of that is how you structure the project. I mean, up until PHP version 3, it was just me, and I wasn't all that. Whenever someone would send me any sort of suggestion or patch, I would rework it, and it was my stuff. Right. No one else was going to touch this.
You weren't
stuff.
Good at delegating.
I wasn't. I hadn't really sort of caught this open source ideology. And the word open source didn't even exist back then, actually. But I hadn't really figured out the value of this. And it didn't take that long. I got a job at the University of Toronto to build their dial-up access system back in, I guess it was 97 or so. No, 96 I started doing that. And that's when it started catching on a little bit, that I would build this thing, I would add features to it, I would release it to the world, basically, but I was adding features specifically for the University of Toronto project I was on. And occasionally I would get a useful patch back to fix some bug that I hadn't hit yet. Or I would get stuck on something, and I had one guy in Japan that was regularly sending me patches back then, and it was really cool to get someone in Japan basically helping me with this consulting job that I was doing. And it started catching on then, but it wasn't regular enough. And then a year later, I had to really figure out, okay, I really need to encourage contributions like this. And when people come along, I can't take over. I can't take their patch and rework it the way I would have done it. I basically just have to accept it, and I have to give up control and give other people the strength and the power to do whatever they wanted to, basically. And I think that's a very, very hard thing for a lot of open source developers. Even today, it's like, okay, it's their baby. They control where it goes. And for it to grow, you have to completely let it go, and you have to let other contributors take it in whatever direction that they want. And you can provide a little bit of guidance, but you can't really force it too much.
And should we as users be a little more gracious?
It wouldn't hurt. I mean, you do
gracious
have
gracious or patient.
You have to realize that these people are volunteers. I mean, they come home from, most of them, like 90% of open source developers come home from whatever job they have that has very little to do with this open source project, and they put their kids to bed, and then they sit down for 2 hours to basically volunteer their time. And then opening up email client and getting lots of angry messages from people saying that, oh, there's a bug here, there's a bug here, mm-hmm. this bug took down this our $1 million e-commerce operation or something, and it's like, okay, well, sorry, but I volunteer 2 hours a night, and it's not really something that I can care too much about that this cost you $1 million or whatever, right? So, yeah, you have to take it into perspective a little bit.
Open source is such a boon, and and you guys are such a resource to the community. Whatever we can do as a community to really give you the respect you deserve.
Well, you know, Rasmus's car was a little dirty when he pulled up.
I'll wash his car because, you know, I owe him. I run so much PHP code on my server. Everything from the BitTorrent tracker to the Drupal software.
You don't own me. You don't owe me anything. We have 1,100 committers now to the PHP project.
So you've gotten okay at delegating, it sounds like.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of goes back to that. And how big a barrier do you put on people to actually join the project? And very early on, I decided, okay, having this big barrier where I control everything didn't work at all. So let's take it to the other extreme. Let's pull down all the walls completely. And the PHP project is known for basically handing out CVS accounts like candy. And in a certain sense, it's true. It doesn't take very much clue to get yourself a PHP.NET CVS account. But at the same time, my take on it is it doesn't cost us anything. If someone has a bad commit, okay, we reverse it. I mean, that's what source control is all about. It's really not that bad. And everyone has some bad code to begin with. And being very open and bringing people in has really helped us over the years. And these are the guys that we owe. All these guys that decided, okay, I'm not going to start off and doing my own thing. I'm going to join an existing project and enhance it. That's when open source really works. Because if everyone goes off on their own, like I did, nothing would work. We can't all build this thing. I could never have built PHP by myself. No chance whatsoever.
1,100 is a large number of committers.
Yes, it's a large number of committers. When we have a bunch of folks that are idle, and that's out of those 1,100, at least half of them probably haven't committed anything in the past 2 years. But every now and then, one of these guys suddenly pops back up and commits something. And we haven't really done too much to weed out stale accounts. Occasionally, we have folks that just got an account just to get the PHP.NET email address. And
you shouldn't say that, because now you're going to get a bunch of people.
It would be you have to show a decent patch, or you have to do something. If you fix a bug or give us a decent patch, then you're welcome to a PHP.NET account.
That's cool. So unlike a lot of languages, well, I shouldn't say that, but you know, Perl's talking about Perl 6. I don't hear a PHP 6 marketing drumbeat coming along.
Okay, yeah, we suck at marketing, but we're well underway with PHP 6.
Good. Tell us about it.
The big push is Unicode support. So everything inside PHP 6 is going to be UTF-16 based.
Seems like that's one of the things that's motivating a lot of these rewrites.
Because Unicode is hard. I had a meeting back in 2000 with a bunch of guys that knew stuff about Unicode, a couple of Japanese developers, and a guy from IBM who knew a lot about the ICU project. And back then, this ICU thing, which is IBM's Unicode library, it just wasn't it just wasn't there yet. It was too big and unwieldy. It was like an order of magnitude more code than PHP itself. So it wasn't, it felt like we were just bolting PHP onto ICU.
Just ICU was 10 times bigger than PHP itself.
Yeah, it's huge. It's massive. It's amazing. Complex.
It does so many.
And it wasn't modular back then. So you couldn't just take out the pieces that you needed. So there was a big push to stick ICU into PHP back then, but I just couldn't see it. It felt more like
it was actually achieving sentience. That's
it felt more like we're just putting a little bit of PHP into ICU versus the other way around.
Right.
But now ICU has evolved, and we can now pick and choose and just pull in the pieces of ICU that we need. And now it is actually feasible to build PHP with ICU support and have full Unicode everywhere. So that's the big push for PHP 6. There are some other things like namespaces and other often asked features. But
are a bunch of the libraries going to have to get rewritten for the Unicode stuff? Or
The extensions.
Yeah,
a bunch of the functions will have to... Well, basically every function will have to be reviewed and have a look at what it does with any strings that get passed into it. If it just bounces it along, probably not. Mm-hmm. But if it does any string manipulation, then yes, they have to be. And it's a big task right now.
Wow. How about... go ahead.
So shipping next week, or...
We're hoping for an early release, like not even a beta, but probably like an alpha release or some kind of
a
release for testing and for comments and stuff by the end of the year. Okay. But it's not going to be feature complete, but it's going to be, okay, guys, have a look, give it a try. What sort of pain points do you hit? How much of your code have we broken? Because we're trying to do it so that you can take just about any PHP 5 code and just have it work without thinking too much about it. And suddenly you can now do fancy Unicode things. Hmm. And if we do it right, then there isn't going to be much pain for people to get to it. But there's going to be some things that we didn't think of. So we're getting an early release out to have a look. And then we're hoping for a 2007 release. It's not going to drag on for 5 years like some other languages.
And it'll keep working with both 1.x Apache and 2.x Apache?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm just running a PHP Info on my server, which, by the way, thank you for PHP Info. That is a great tool. I use it not just for PHP, but just to find out what's going on my server. But I'm still running version 4, and I think a lot of people are.
Yeah, it works, right? So, I mean, if you have no reason to...
And 5 is scary.
Is it really?
I'm kidding.
I'm scared. I don't want to change because, you know, it's working, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't be scary. And we put out patches and security fixes for 4, and we'll continue doing so until we see a complete drop-off in PHP 4 usage out there. But it really shouldn't scare people. For the most part, anything that runs on PHP 4 will run fine on PHP 5. What the big sticky point usually is a large ISP that have hundreds of users with thousands of different PHP scripts, and if they operate from 4 to 5, then yes, they may have, out of those thousands of scripts, they may have 3 or 4 that will break. And to them, that's scary enough. There's no reason to take that risk when nobody's really complaining about it. But you will start to see there are some pretty appealing features in PHP 5, like the simple XML support.
Yeah, that's really nice.
The SOAP extension, like really, really fast SOAP support. So, I mean, if you're doing any Web 2.0 type things with web services and doing a lot of XML parsing, it's quite painful to do in PHP 4. That was really our focus for PHP 5. So you'll see most
XML
of these
stuff is remarkable.
So yeah, I'm just going to rebuild my Apache. You guys continue to talk. And
okay, so yeah. Snap get just upgrade. What are you talking about?
If twit.tv goes down, I'll be back.
It's okay. You can email Rasmus.
Would you rewrite my code for me?
Well, I'd imagine the Drupal is okay.
Drupal, I'm sure, is okay with
that. Yeah,
I don't know why I'm running 4. I see the latest version I have available is 5.1.4, so I'm going to start that build right now. There is some compelling reasons, even if you're not going to change your code, to you go to 5 or no?
Will it be faster?
It probably won't be that much faster. I mean, it's in the same ballpark performance-wise. Some things are quite a bit faster. A few things are the same speed. So it depends a little bit what your code does. If your code is lucky enough to use some of the things that we sped up a lot,
it will probably be quite
a bit faster. Otherwise, it'll probably be about the same speed.
Let's talk about some of the things people say about PHP. Sometimes people complain about performance with PHP. I mean, I have no problem. It's scaling very well for me.
You just mixed two things there. The performance and scalability have very little to do with each other.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Actually, right? So, I mean, performance is how fast a single server can serve up a single request, right? Scalability is how wide you can scale. So if you have 100,000 concurrent requests, can you handle that load in a somewhat timely manner?
And both are important for a server, but the latter is really more important for most
servers. Sure. In a certain sense, performance is extremely important because you can't really buy your way out of that. You can get faster CPUs, but putting lots of servers next to each other, if your latency on a single request is half a second, putting 500 servers next to each other is just going to give you, you can take a lot of requests at the same time, but each of them is going to have a 500 millisecond latency.
Right.
Right. So that's the performance part. The performance part will reduce the latency and you'll be able to take more requests on a single server. Scalability is more about architecture and making sure that you build something that does not tie you to a single machine. So this, we have this concept called shared nothing architecture that's sort of behind everything that we do in PHP. So we have this PHP sandbox, which means that you get a request in, the request gets processed, and everything about that request gets torn down at the end of the request. So there's nothing that survives across requests. So you have to build your system so that requests are independent of each other, which means that they can come in on separate servers. And you can put them behind a load balancer, and you can put 500 servers behind that load balancer, and it doesn't affect anything. Your application will still work. You can do some things in your application that will defeat that, obviously. You can have, write stuff to the temp directory on a single file, on a single server.
Use shared memory segments.
You can use shared memory segments. The session extension in PHP by default will save to the local temp directory, mostly so that it'll work out of the box. But we provide a very easy mechanism to build yourself a database-backed session data store. So, I mean, everything we've done with PHP has been geared towards making sure that it scales. So scalability, and that's why large companies like Yahoo and all these other startups and Flickr and folks use PHP, because it's sort of in PHP blood, in its blood to be scalable. Mm-hmm. And people talk about PHP not being scalable because they don't read very much about how to scale it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's mostly because we don't have a scalability problem. So you don't see articles that talk about, well, how do we solve the scalability problem with PHP? No, so people say, well, it doesn't scale because nobody talks about scaling PHP. that just gets quite annoying. Performance-wise, there are various things you can do. PHP has this two-stage approach to, like most scripting languages. First, we compile the script itself, the text that's sitting on the disk. We compile that to a set of opcodes. And then those opcodes we pass to the executor, and the executor runs through and executes. Sort of like Java and its bytecode, right? So standard PHP will do both operations on a single request. So the request comes in, we grab the script from disk, we compile it down to a set of opcodes, pass the opcodes to the executor, and that executes. You can put in what's called an opcode cache, which I've been working on one for a couple of years called APC. There are quite a few others out there. And they go in and they take those opcodes after the compile phase and shove them into shared memory. So on the second request for a script, we will see that, hey, we will check shared memory. We stat the file first, optionally, but we can stat the file and see, okay, this is the inode. Do we have a cached version of this particular inode in shared memory? If we do, we point the executor directly at those opcodes sitting in shared memory, and we skip that whole step, and that will speed up your scripts by 30-40%.
This is similar to what Python does with PYCs, but you don't do a compiled version to disk.
No, we tend to not do it because the slow part is really reading from disk.
So it doesn't save you much
It doesn't save us all that much, right, to just read opcodes. Because, yes, the opcodes are smaller. They'll be slightly smaller files, but we don't, I mean, reading 500 bytes versus 1,000 bytes, as long as it's a single block, you don't save anything by just reducing it.
Well, you save the processing time into opcodes, but...
Yeah, you do save a little bit, but when to really get some savings, you want to get rid of that disk operation. Any sort of disk-touching system calls are expensive.
Run it out of memory,
And if you just run them without even copying them around, so copy as little as possible, but just point the executor directly at shared memory and have it go is by far the fastest. And there's also a mode where you can run APC to not even stat the file, so that if you actually do change your scripts on disk,
you have to tell it.
You have to tell it, or you have to restart your web server or something, because you can change those scripts all you want, and it's not going to change what you see when you point your browser at it, because it's all going to come out of memory.
And nowadays, people have enough system memory that this system works quite well, I would imagine.
Yeah. All the high-performance sites out there will be using an opcode cache of some kind.
It sounds like it's worth throwing more RAM at PHP.
So what was Zend actually doing before? They had a different parser, or... What was their big... Because they were selling a big performance game.
It sounded like they were caching in some way.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing. They have an opcode cache as well. They have a proprietary opcode cache, and there are a couple of open source ones out there. So you have a couple of choices for which opcode cache to go with.
Do you have one you prefer?
The one I work on called APC. Well, it's not. I didn't start it. Somebody else started it. I helped them get going. Then they sort of got tired of it, and I needed a kick-ass... opcode cache, and I sort of got in there and finished it up.
It seems to be the conventional wisdom that if you're going to run PHP on a server, a busy server, you should have a cache of some kind.
Yeah, you should. And you can buy one from Zend, or you can try your luck with the open source ones.
APC. You don't need any luck.
What does APC stand for? Advanced PHP?
No, it's the alternative PHP cache when they started. Because it used to be Zend was the first one to come out with an opcode cache.
But it wasn't free.
It wasn't free. It was proprietary. There was no source code available. So other folks said, well, this sucks. We want an open source version. This is an open source language. We need an open source cache. So they started this alternative PHP cache. And it's working quite well.
That's great. I'll have to see what I'm running on my server. How about security? How much do you think about security? Is that a responsibility of PHP or a responsibility of the programmer?
Well, we certainly have some responsibility there. There's been a lot of security talk over the years about PHP. Some of it quite fair, a lot of it unfair, I think.
Well, there's a lot of bad implementations out there.
There's a lot of bad code out there, and we can't address all of them. Some of the stuff that has been reported has been our fault. We do have bugs, and we try to fix them promptly. A lot of the stuff, though, has not in any way been something we could do anything about. And PHP is somewhat more prone to these because we are more accessible than other languages, which means that people with less experience will be drawn to PHP. And some of the code they write is not necessarily the most secure or the best architected code in the world. Mm-hmm. And when they release software that other people then download and use, and they tend to put PHP in the name of their thing as well, because they're so proud of the fact that, hey, I managed to figure something out. I managed to put something out there.
PHP BB, right, yeah.
Well, I'm not
naming any names.
And those guys
all rhyme with PHP BB.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure why we have that problem more than others. But, I mean, it's not called Python Mailman.
It's not.
Out of other things, there aren't that many projects you know of that's called Perl something or Python something or Ruby something. Well, Ruby on Rails is different, but it's an add-on. But still, you see so many things that are named PHP.
Because they love it.
And
they love you.
They have some very strong emotional attachment to it, so they put that as part of the name.
It's true. PHP MyAdmin. There's a lot of them.
If you look through, you can find a ton of
PHP SysInfo.
anything with PHP in its name, there's a bug report about it, or there's a security problem with it. It gets related to PHP by association, right?
Right.
If there's a security problem in Mailman, your first reaction is not to think, oh, there's a security problem in Python, right? You just don't make that correlation. Right. It's like, okay, well, who wrote Mailman did something stupid, right? But whenever there's something in the PHP thing out there, then, oh, it's got to be the PHP project again. This language is insecure. Look, another problem in some PHP code.
Do you have things, as Perl does, like a strict and taint and so forth to ensure that the programmers are doing the right thing?
Well, we have various warning levels. You can turn on what's called e-notices, and you get a lot of the same warnings you get from a Perl strict mode, where if you're trying to access a variable that you haven't assigned before, you'll get a warning. And some of those same things are there. On the taint side, it gets very tricky. Because of the way the web works, everything is a string. And the browsers don't don't differentiate between numbers or different types. Everything comes across and you have to treat them as a string, basically. So if you put an age field up on the form, it comes in as a string that happens to have numbers in it. And so we have to treat everything as a string. And those strings end up going to many different backends. They go to databases. They go to almost anything, LDAP queries, whatever. And having sort of a single untaint doesn't work very well. Yeah. You have to have a context-based untaint that says, well, this data is safe for this use, but it's not safe for that particular use.
Right.
And it's been extremely hard to come up with something that actually makes sense in this web-heavy world of ours. A lot of Perl code, they just have a single untaint that just says, okay, well, we'll untaint it.
It's not going to work with that, right?
And then it might be fine for some uses of that data, but it will not be safe at all for other uses. So then they put other filters downstream, but Perl's already saying that this thing is untainted, so they shouldn't have to do that. So I'm not quite sure then, well, how do you then track it after that? So what we basically came up with for PHP 5 was a what's called a filter extension, where we are filtering all data coming in. We basically treat it like a network firewall, but for data. So this is a data firewall. Traditionally, in web programming, people have tried to strip out the bad stuff, and that just doesn't work. And instead, this data firewall that we're putting in PHP 5, it strips out everything and only lets through the good stuff.
Pure text.
Basically simple text. So you don't get a greater than sign, a less than sign. You don't get, if your name is O. Henry, you're out of luck. You don't get a single quote. So a lot of the stuff just gets stripped out. And it's going to force people to go in and poke small holes in this data firewall. So they'll say, well, here I have a text area for Drupal where I'm putting in raw HTML. So that code will have to go in and say, okay, give me raw text here for this particular text field. The age field and some of the other things, or this drop-down select box that only has three static choices, that should be fine. You don't need to do anything there. And people typically forget before this, people would forget to filter these things because they say, okay, it's a multi-select box. The user can only select one of those three. But
what's the problem, right?
Yeah, what's the problem? But obviously, the bad guy can post whatever he wants to that form. And people post JavaScript into a select box like that, and it will get executed.
Right.
And it's a really bad thing. So this idea of having to remember every place that you could possibly inject bad things, it's just a no-win situation. You see new cross-site scripting problems every day being reported about all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
So the approach I took was, let's just filter everything and have people poke holes in the data firewall where they need it. That also lets you audit this stuff so that I can take an application off the web running under this data firewall, and I can go through and I can put in my holes, or if they've already done it, I can go through and I can audit those four places in the application where they're taking raw data off the wire, and I can follow those four places as opposed to try to look at the infinite number of places where this data sort of flows through the application. So that's our approach, and it's going to be a little hard to get people used to doing this, but I think the pain is going to be worth it in the end. And if you're working in an enterprise where you can't just take random open source packages and stick them up on your company's intranet or extranet even, this is something that might actually let you do that. You can set your security policy with whatever default filter you want for this filter extension, and then you can go in and modify it and poke holes so you know exactly where things are going to get through this data firewall.
That seems like a good solution.
Well, we'll see. I've been using this solution at Yahoo now for years, and it has worked for us. And we'll see what the rest of the world thinks of this approach.
So you're at Yahoo.
I am.
And they do a lot of PHP.
Yes, they do.
At least a page or two a day.
Do you want to talk about what parts of Yahoo are PHP?
Well, pretty much every part now.
Really?
I mean, yeah, every.
I mean, that's a good example of scaling. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody who would say PHP doesn't scale isn't looking at Yahoo then. Wow. Even Yahoo Mail and so forth?
The old classic mail is not PHP. The new, I don't know if you've seen the...
Yeah. The stuff based on mail? Outpost, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff is all PHP.
Was Outpost PHP?
Honestly, I don't know.
Because
Outpost was mostly JavaScript.
Yeah, that's right, because it's all client-side, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a lot of it's client-side. Yeah. I don't actually know what they had server-side. That was never the interesting part to me about the Outpost stuff. The JavaScript magic they did was interesting to me.
I love the Yahoo Mail beta. I mean, I think it's a very, very good example of what Ajax and client-side scripting can do. I mean, it just really is like Outlook.
Oh. Yeah. And behind that is PHP 5.
Fantastic. And behind my site is now PHP 5, I'm proud to say.
Is it working?
Compiled without a problem. Yep.
Okay, but is it working?
Well, there's one cosmetic thing I noticed. I don't know why. It's probably something in the template code. That's a minor thing. I'll fix it.
Okay.
We have very good designers, Drupal designers, and Drupal is... I'm very happy with Drupal. I think it's wonderful.
It's really taken off, too.
I'm glad to hear
it everywhere.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite PHP projects?
There's one called Moodle.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys have heard of Moodle, but basically it's a learning management system that a lot of universities around the world have been...
Kind of a courseware CBT thing, or...?
More like something called Blackboard.
Mm-hmm. Just collaboration?
Scheduling classes and teacher-student collaboration, right. And grades, class scheduling, signing up for classes. There's a little wiki component in it, so you can create sort of a per-class or a per-project wiki. Mm. You can submit your assignments via this little wiki thing, and there's all kinds of stuff in there. But it was written by a guy who I think he has a minor in CS and a PhD in education or something like that. So a very good combination for someone to sit down and really think about how should one of these systems be built. And everywhere I go to a lot of conferences around the world, and everywhere I go, I have students that come up to me and say, oh, yeah, I use this Moodle thing. And professors coming up and telling me how great this Moodle is.
And since it's written in PHP, that means you wrote it.
It's responsible for everything that happens. That reminds me, I use PM Wiki for my other sites, so I also use PHP on my other sites.
Cool.
One of the nice things from a point of view of a user for PHP is it's a simple thing to install. It's just text files. There's no big CGI.
I think that's a testament to how easy it is to install.
Well, I think it means applications
from the end user, as a webmaster.
Well, yeah, some stuff is easy. I mean, it depends a little bit on the applications you want to install running under PHP as well.
Right.
Some installers are better than others.
Right. Go ahead.
All right. Oh, you're asking me about cool projects. I think another really cool project is one called Sahana. Sahana. It's a crisis management or like disaster management system written by a bunch of folks in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, you know, we've helped fund that.
You helped fund it?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So same with Moodle. Actually, we had Summer Code Kids doing that, and we helped at the Sri Lanka Software Foundation last year. So.
Yeah, there's some Yahoo funding too, actually.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, no, Sanjeev's great. So.
Yeah. But anyway, so that those kind of projects that really touch a lot of people are the ones that, to me, really makes this stuff worthwhile. So between all the noise of all the criticism, then you see projects like Sahana that actually saves people's lives.
That's wonderful.
That to me is cool.
Yeah, it was developed after the tsunami to help refugees find each other.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was cool.
Yeah, and to direct aid to the right places and all these big problems that you have after a disaster. And they were able to deploy it very quickly. They also deployed it in Pakistan after the big earthquake. And it's, I think, three or four times now they've actually used it successfully in big disasters.
Not in Katrina, though.
They offered it, but nobody was interested.
Oh, my goodness. Jeez Louise. That's amazing, isn't it? What else besides Moodle and Sahana that you like? Obviously, we're going to leave a lot of people out.
Gallery? Do you like Gallery?
Yeah, I mean, I use Gallery. Some of the stuff I use myself. I use Gallery for family photos. I use a blog package called Serendipity, or S9Y for short. As in, like, same logic as I18N or L10N, right? S9Y, because serendipity is too long.
Yeah.
I've used some Drupal as well. I've used FUDForum, which is a bulletin board package.
There are a lot of BBSs written in PHP. That seems to be the language of choice, I think. For a lot of this stuff. In fact, what's interesting, and I don't think it's necessarily because of PHP, it probably says more about what the web's all about, but a lot of these are about community.
Right.
And community building. I don't know if there's a hook in PHP that makes you want to use it for community building, but it seems like that's what they
do. Well, I think the hook is accessibility.
Yeah.
Like,
it's easy.
Enabling people who have an idea of how they want something to work to actually let them do that. Because if everything was written by CS students or CS guys, we would have a very boring web, right? We want the guy with a PhD in education to write a learning management system, right?
Right.
We want people in the midst of a disaster to sit down and say, okay, we really need a system that can do this, this, and this. And we don't want them to have to go out and hire a computer science guy to sit down and write it for them because they can't figure out the language.
Excellent.
Right? Or afford it.
Yeah, excellent.
Or afford,
right.
Or afford it, right. Or we want the optometrist in his spare time to write a better optometry office management software package.
Right.
And Andrew Tridgell, who's a famous open source guy, happens to have a brother who's an optometrist who did that.
Wow, that's neat. So where should somebody who has this idea and wants to implement it on the web start to learn PHP?
PHP.net.
Yeah, I guess PHP.net. There are lots of books about it as well, or download some code and see how it works. I mean, most people get into PHP by taking something like Drupal or any one of these packages that they download and install. It's pretty easy to install an existing PHP thing, and then going in and just try changing something. Find something about it that you want to make different, have it work slightly differently, and walk through and see how is it actually written and how can you go in and make it do something different. And that tends to be, to me at least, that's the quickest way of getting an idea of seeing existing code and seeing, you knowing exactly what it does, then figuring out how it does it and then changing it. And then you're pretty well on your way to write your own code from there.
It's pretty intuitive.
Or you could write a Tetris game.
That might be hard.
Not made for Tetris.
No. Yeah.
No, that was also a running gag.
Oh, okay.
You could write a text-based Tetris.
Well, I don't know. You could write a graphical one. I mean, there are graphical libraries for PHP. You know, people forget that it is a scripting language, and you can use...
Oh, you can even write
AQT.
Yeah, you can PHP GTK can write like straight Windows applications.
Although I think, as we pointed out when we were talking about Python, that really the interface these days is the browser.
Yeah,
yeah, that gives you the GUI.
Right, and that's part of PHP's success. That from 11 years ago, we targeted the web.
Right.
We thought about nothing else. All our documentation, all our examples, everything was web-focused. So we have a slight, that's part of the accessibility angle, that we have a slight advantage in some of the other languages that are general purpose, is that they can't just cover one thing. They sort of have to talk in more general terms. And when the lazy programmer is sitting there going, well, how do I do this for
the web? I just want to do a web page.
Yeah, if they can copy and paste the example directly out of the documentation and it works, then... That gets them going quicker.
Yep, I agree. Well, thank you, Rasmus. It's really been a pleasure talking to you. And thank you for a language that has really powered so many great things on the net.
It's quite handy.
Thank you to the community that built it.
Yes, 1,100 strong. That's amazing.
Pretty handy preprocessor.
There you go.
Now
I like that.
Been quite a few. People hate Perl. Sorry.
That's a good one. I like it.
It works for so many languages.
Sorry, Larry.
We do hope to get Larry on the show at some point, but I don't think he'll mind one bit. It's one of the fun things, really, about talking about all with all these language implementers is all the both rivalry, but they also are in the same boat, and I think there's more in common than more than.
Yeah, no, I haven't talked to Larry a bunch of times.
Actually, in the lunchroom today, he had a fight with Guido.
Did he? And they get a fist fight?
It was really embarrassing. The security had to break him up. Yeah. Like, hey, what's going on here, Debone? You bringing all these fighters in? And,
Well, also, I think what's neat about...
You're never coming back here, Rasmus. Never.
The thing I like about Rasmus is that he doesn't come from a computer science background, and so it's very pragmatic. It's a very different way of looking at a language. And it's obviously worked.
Yeah, when you said that, he sort of went, yeah.
No, I don't mean that as a backhanded
so
insult.
It's funny, because for like, I don't know how many years I've been watching Rasmus give speeches and stuff, and he keeps on bringing out this, you know, I'm not a programmer, I'm not a computer scientist. It's almost a shtick now. You know? It's like, after 12 years of having created a language,
you're a computer scientist. Yeah, you know? Yeah, I think you count, yeah.
It doesn't work anymore, you know. Oh, I'm not a programmer. It's like a guy who's been, you know, a crane operator for 20 years. I can't operate a crane.
False humility.
Well, read my code sometime, and that's what, my point.
Well, it's great talking to you. Thank you for joining us on Floss Week.
Thanks, Leo.
Really appreciate it. What a treat to talk to Rasmus, and I'm just very impressed. Again, as I have been with many of these people that we've brought to us, with their gentility, their intelligence, and really the way that their contribution to the community.
Well, it's funny, you know, you say that after these interviews, and I always think the same thing in the back of my head. Who do you normally talk to in the computer industry, and are they that bad?
Oh, they're bastards out there. They're awful. Go talk to some closed source guys.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad.
Well, think about it. The difference is, you know, in business, it's competitive. It's a zero-sum game. I succeed to the detriment of my competitors. Remember Andy Grove's book about, what was it? I can't remember what it is.
Only the paranoid survive.
Only the paranoid survive. Yeah. That's right. Open source is
quite
the...
There's a whole chapter on backstabbing.
Exactly. You know, and you're asking me, open source people, it's a complete opposite. You know, we succeed only to the degree that we all succeed, that we all pull together. And there, yeah, there really isn't, you know, and I keep expecting some of that competition. And I know that it's a human, natural human tendency, if you wrote PHP, sure, to kind of think Perl, ha-ha. But there isn't really. There's a real collegiality that I've always been impressed with. And it's great. And we are the beneficiaries of it, clearly.
We are indeed. We are indeed.
Well, Chris, I don't know what we're doing next week, but I'm sure it'll be fascinating. We have so
I
many
don't
good
either, in- but we'll figure it
we'll
out.
We'll have some great stuff. Did you get any tape at OSCON at all?
No.
You were
I'm
too busy.
So lame.
That's
I was
all right.
So flipping busy. And
you
I was carrying around this thing in my backpack, and it was like an extra 10 pounds.
I don't blame you. I do the same thing every time. I often have, you know, I've gone to Macworld and stuff with these, and I've never brought anything back. So it's too much fun enjoying the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Now, I'm going to be in New York next week, but I'm going to certainly find time to do this. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time for another Floss Weekly. See you, Chris.
See you, Leo.